Hello and welcome to CanCreo, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And for all of those excited folks looking to hear the latest news and all things gay and wonderful, may have been disappointed by our Eurovision special last week.
Well, I mean, it's Eurovision, so of course there's going to be disappointment.
Eurovision is inherently just disappointing.
Especially when the UK comes on. It's kind of their...
Their mantra, yeah.
Yeah.
The UK in Europe, hashtag, we aim to disappoint.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Now, I don't know if it was payback for the whole Brexit thing, or the fact that all of the Brexiteers are now voting for pretty radical right-wing Brexit party people in the UK. But Europe responded by making Britain last place out of 42.
Well, they've been holding last place for quite some time, though. It's just it just boggles my mind that, you know, the amazing talent that has come out of England, and they're not there. They're not sending Kate Bush. They're not sending, I don't know. They're not sending Radiohead. They're not sending, you know, Oasis is divisive, but they were popular. Send out Oasis, and they could cinch it. I don't know. Who knows? Or the guy who did Thing People. Blur, not Blur. Although Blur also. They could just send Blur.
There's none of these. No. I mean, we could send Blur if Tel Aviv would keep them.
Yeah, well. Blur was fun.
I'm thinking of Oasis.
Yeah, you were thinking of Oasis.
Or Coldplay. They all have that sort of dreary same sound.
Yeah. Me. Well, dreary but no art. Because, like, Radiohead is dreary, but it's dreary but there's art.
Okay. Well, anyway, Britain went from 16 points and actually was in last place. But the news that's broken out since then was that the Belarusian jury was dismissed because they revealed their votes in the semi-final. You're not supposed to tell people how much you voted. So then what they did is they averaged out every other country to create an average score, which would then be subbed in for the Belarusians.
That's weird.
It's not a bad way to go. Because then the missing 41st jury would be literally the average of every other jury. Sounds good. Except human error is apparently a thing, and they got it wrong. So they've actually, after the whole event, they further downgraded the UK from last place with 16 points to last place with 11 points. Just to let everybody know that the UK did even more worse and more badly than anyone thought previously.
Do you remember when Germany got 0 points, like, 3 years ago? And it was that girl, and she sang a song that was like Lana Del Rey, but she was dressed like a K-pop band, and the stage was dressed like she was doing black metal.
Yeah, no, it was weird.
It was, each individual part was excellent, it just came together poorly. So, yeah. I mean, that's what a 0 points production looks like.
Their song Sisters,
like,
which we didn't play in last week's show.
Because it was tepid.
Actually, it has been really growing on me. And that's one of the things I find, is that you can be surprised by songs that get stuck in your head a few days later. Scream by the Russian entry.
I have been listening to the Australian one a billion times over. Because it was just so incredibly different. And vocal coaches, people have been picking it apart, saying that there was really interesting stuff going on where she was mixing opera and pop singing styles, and they've never heard somebody do that before, and or at least not to that level of skill. So yeah, no, it's really interesting.
Speaking of level of skill, Madonna came in for quite harsh critique. And this is the last little Eurovision news bit. But Madonna came in for harsh critique during her performance, with sort of the social media essentially saying, you know, we love you, but why are you interrupting Eurovision with this? And actually, we were watching it thinking, you know, if Madonna's act was an act, I think the UK did better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not
great.
Really, Madonna came in last. And it was a really weird performance, because I kept saying, like, what happened to her lung capacity? And you kept saying, well, you know, she's old. But there's a lot of singers who get into their 60s and 70s and can still sing. And she's got a microphone. She's not singing to the back row without a mic.
No.
But it was just really weird. It was not a good performance. And it was auto-tuned.
Well, it was after the fact. I was about to say, our listeners who may be thinking, oh, Madonna at Eurovision, I should check that out.
No, don't do that.
If you Google it and you see Madonna's upload, it's actually been auto-corrected from the live performance.
Auto-correcting
it was pitch-corrected.
Yes, there you go. Auto-correcting is spelling.
Well, I mean, it's the live singing version of a spell check.
And when you're singing, if she uses the wrong there, I don't know if you can tell.
That's true. It doesn't highlight red. And
she put an apostrophe in its where it is not needed. That doesn't come up when you sing.
But she apparently the video that was uploaded by her account has been pitch corrected after she was heavily criticized following the show. Now, quite the kerfuffle. Now, we have been, you may be able to tell that we're a little bit phlegmy. As not Flemish, phlegmy.
Okay.
As a result, and you were just telling me possibly why we have all of the tree pollen up in our noses.
Well, I mean, it's more of a parks problem and less of a general problem. If you live in the countryside, this is less likely to be true. And this is something that I just read because this is the kind of thing that I like to read. That botany has a problem with sexism.
No.
And when I first read that title, I was thinking, oh god, it's going to be one of those things where they're kind of right, but they're calling it a 9 when it's a 2 level of problem. But actually, no, when you get into it, actually, it's a serious problem where botanists are deeply sexist. And to clarify, a lot of flowering trees have separate male and female trees. Mm-hmm. Marijuana, famously, you have male marijuana and female marijuana plants as well. There's a lot of flowers that are like that. And the trees that make the big, pretty flowers are the males. And the female trees are the ones that drop fruit all over your property, and then your car runs over it, and then you've got, like, smushed-in fruit everywhere.
Yeah.
So when you're in the city, the vast majority of flowering trees that you see that bloom in the spring are male, which also means the pollen count is through the roof because pollen is just tree semen all up in your nose.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's literally just...
That's the thing. Yeah. And, yeah, we're not seeing a lot of the female trees in the city, and that's helping drive up the pollen count. One of the few exceptions, I mean, things like ginkgos are actually a completely and totally different branch from most of the other flowering trees. And ginkgos, you get male and female flowers on the same tree, but ginkgos also smell terrible. But that terrible smell only lasts a week, and they're very pollution resistant. So ginkgos are great on the inner city, and they have those pretty flower, the leaves that are like fan, they're fan shaped.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And then they kind of turn like a pretty yellow shade in the autumn. Basically what I'm saying is everyone should plant a ginkgo on their property.
Yeah.
And then chop down the male tree that's trying to inseminate your face.
Yes. Hey Heva PSA.
This message has been brought to you by Canqueer.
Yeah. Oh, brought to you by female trees. Yeah. Flowers are pretty until you sneeze everywhere,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Too. All right.
So what do we have for serious news?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know, this week we have a lot of really good news about various Pride things that have come up that I wanted to touch on, which I'm quite excited about. Of course, we're edging into Pride season. Some of them have already happened.
What?
It's true.
Which
ones?
And
for some of our listeners...
Name two.
Well, you're putting me under pressure. It's not going to happen. And for some of our listeners, you may be hearing this around the first week of June, which is obviously what a number of them happen as well.
Yeah.
So we are already hearing some great things, a lot of flag raisings, a lot of flags not being raised, but then people kind of coming up with alternative plans.
Okay.
So I want to kick off actually with something that we mentioned in passing, where we took a look at the federal budget that got released a little while ago. If you cast your mind back.
I do not remember this. This was not 2 weeks ago. This must have been much further back.
This was much further back.
Okay.
Well, most people don't realize that the federal government tried to pass a budget And then the Conservatives objected to every single line in said budget.
Whoever the official opposition is, regardless, they always hate the budget. It's standard.
But this was really taking the mickey. They introduced so many amendments, and they went up voting on it for 24 hours straight over several days, and it was like a week of non-stop voting, because they had to have a Liberal majority in the room at any hour, because if the budget's defeated, the government is defeated. So it was just this major power play.
Were they voting on it line by line?
Well, effectively, amendment by amendment. So the actual content...
I mean, that's the kind of thing that people who are not very informed on how politics typically works, that's what they would want. They would want individual good proposals to be accepted and individual bad proposals to be rejected, and to not put 1,000 things into a bucket and then vote on all of them.
With the exception of the budget.
Yeah, because it's so big.
Which is everything. It's a one document for all of the spending. Yeah.
Clustering things into groups of, 5 to 10, I think, is fair. Because, I do sympathize with the notion of preferring voting on an issue-by-issue basis. But you're right, the budget is just too big.
And I think the extreme to which it was taken is ridiculous.
And in the end, it's up to the ministries to interpret the budget anyway. So half of the bylines they put in there are probably going to get ignored when they're like, that's not how we do things, actually.
So the issue is, which is why I'm bringing up, is that we took a look. We found some things in the budget. We tried to get a meeting with Randy Boissonneau, but of course, Boissonneau had to be in Parliament every hour of the day to vote yes for the budget. So we couldn't get it to happen. But what it did is it managed to kill any news about various budget items. So they announced, we have a budget, we're going to vote on it. And the vote took a week.
Okay.
So then the news just moved on to other things. And they lost all the momentum of what was in the budget that was actually quite interesting.
So let's not bury the lead. How is this relevant to Canqueer?
Well, there were a number of LGBT various things in there. And one of them was tourism funding for prides.
Oh.
And it looks like the government has now sort of allocated it to it. We...
I mean, that's an investment. You put $1 million in, you get $10 million back. It's good.
Well, that's the idea. Yeah. It's that big city prides bring in big city tourism. Yeah. And it's a huge thing.
And that's a conservative platform as well of like, it's hard to sell culture and the arts to conservatives unless you're talking about it as an investment that returns back in taxes. At which point they all of a sudden, they're more into investing than the liberals are, traditionally. If they're PCs and not the weird conservatives.
So but the anyway. Fierté de Canada Pride on the 22nd of May released a comment on it saying that the CEF, the Canadian Experiences Fund, which is the the new national tourism strategy, that they're going to be funding especially prides in rural and regional and Indigenous communities in addition to prides in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver. So it's the big three.
Yeah.
Which really are a league of their own.
They are,
And it is unfortunate because we talked before about how the Liberal government there is this emerging perception of how they're leveraging funding with Pride Toronto. So we talked about the executive director does a U-turn on police participation, and then $500,000 arrives in the check in the mail for a public safety survey that's supposed to be nationwide.
Oh, yes.
It's like, and actually when the budget came out, I said that I wouldn't be surprised if a nice chunk of this change goes to prop up the Pride Toronto, which is in pretty dire straits, according to at least an interview that was done by Olivia Nawama and The Sun a little while ago.
Yeah.
So for us, we were expecting, or I was at least expecting, some of this Liberal money to go into Toronto because, A, it is a major city, major tourism dollars, but B, I'm wondering whether or not there's something else going on there.
You mean something fishy, or...?
Well, we will look into it.
On the federal side or on the Toronto side?
Well, they have a very close relationship, and I think that's what we're talking about.
And then Toronto the municipality or Toronto the community?
No, the Pride.
Okay.
The Pride Festival. Now, for their part...
I mean, we can tell you that here in Ottawa, we'll never have that problem, because both when you and I sat on the Pride Committee, both of us became aware of the greatest barrier that Ottawa has to all major events.
Which is Ottawans?
Partly that, and mostly the fact that Ottawa has a well-documented hotel shortage, which interferes with the local tourism, which is something that you don't hear about very often, that Ottawa has a problem where we're just not building enough hotels. And hotels that already exist are getting shut down and converted into, like, student dormitories. Yeah, so it's...
Or hotels like the Chateau Laurier build an ugly... or propose to build an ugly extension... get told this is an ugly extension. Redesign it, get told it's an ugly extension. And then redesign it three more times, each time being like, ta-da!
More ugly.
And they were like, it is literally the same ugly design.
Yeah.
You had one job.
Yeah.
It's a thing. Anyway, it boggles my mind that companies just like...
They're going to have to do...
wheeling out the same...
Anytime there's a historic building that needs work on it, we have to bring people in from Europe. Because they're the only ones who don't want to modernize everything. Or who know how to split the difference, how to modernize something without turning it into glass and corrugated iron.
To go back to this, Olivia Nwama, the executive director of Pride Toronto, says that Pride Toronto is incredibly thankful for this award from the Government of Canada. Mm-hmm. This award allows Pride Toronto to grow the festival and grow our economic impact in the future.
But hasn't Toronto been complaining that they want to scale Pride back to turn it into a community event again? Community event with some tourism built in. Because there have been people who are complaining that Toronto Pride is getting so large that the people who actually live in Toronto can't enjoy their own Pride anymore. Yeah. Because, like, one of the great joys of Pride is the fact that it is the big gay family picnic. And you're going to run into someone you haven't seen in years. And you're like, how are you doing? But when you triple the number of people there and 80% of them are from out of town, all of a sudden it lacks that feel.
And this is a massive cash injection.
It is, yeah.
So each of them, Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver, are getting $1 million each, split over 2 years. So $500,000 a year. That's okay. $500,000.
That's pretty good advertising, yeah.
It's a massive investment in the Pride festivals.
It's like 4 days of Facebook ads.
In addition, and this is actually the bit that really interests me, regional economic development agencies. So there's the Economic Development Agency of Southern Ontario, for example. There's, I think, BC and Alberta has an economic development agency. And essentially, there are bodies that work with specific regions that are usually located in those regions, regional expertise in terms of what's better needed, as opposed to it all coming out of Toronto.
Would business improvement areas fall under that umbrella? They're a lot more local. But
BIAs are municipal. But
it's the same idea.
Yeah, it's the idea of your region would be way back. For example, if you are looking for an economic development grant in Haliburton, there is a Haliburton office of the Southern Ontario Economic Development Grant.
Actually, I do know that...
Economic Development Body.
The economic development body of Abitibi in Western Quebec are trying to plant cherry trees to attract Japanese tourists.
Oh.
Yeah.
Male or female?
they would definitely... Actually, wait. I
was talking about the tourists.
Oh, I see.
No, I was talking about the trees.
Trees, yeah.
Now, anyway, this is really... I'm trying
to remember cherry tree biology all of a sudden. But anyway, go on.
Is that in addition to this... The Canadian government is investing in these regional economic development agencies who will work with Fierté Canada Pride to support even more Pride events. So it says, in essence, they're going to be funding not FCP, but, you know, these regional bodies in collab with FCP.
Well, one of the strong points of FCP, there have been times where they do stuff that I disagree with, but I always agree with them more than not, because one of the big things they're really good at is promoting small town prides and helping smaller prides grow and to find their niche, because not every pride is going to look like Toronto. Not every community has politics in them, but they want to do something to bring the community together, so they help them find their direction by hooking them up with other communities that are trying to do the same thing. So you end up with like, you know, there's some pride in New Brunswick and some pride in northern Saskatchewan that look exactly like each other because their communities are similar enough where they just sort of co-develop a plan. Yeah. So like FCP is great for that sort of thing.
So FCP represents a bajillion prides. They work with so many of them.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
According to the Government of Canada, LGBT travelers typically go on 4 to 6 vacations a year compared to 1 or 2 for the average heterosexual counterpart. And they spend about a third more. So that's the double income, no expenses sort of pink dollar myth.
Well, yeah.
Which is a myth, but also it's, for those who are out there spending, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Now, Fier to Canada Pride, for their part, Heather Hay, the president, said that Pride festivals and LGBTQ2 cultural organizations are an important part of Canada's culture and economy. This announcement will be welcome news to Pride organizations with growing festivals from coast to coast to coast. We are particularly excited that Prides in rural areas, medium-sized cities, and the north will be able to access funding to help them attract tourists. And I think that's a really great thing, that we're able to see them bring more tourism. And you know, that's what it's all about. Big three, they get money. Woot, hardly surprising.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the North Bays, it's the Bellevilles, it's those little towns that...
I've heard a lot of people say...
That's a big deal.
Their favorite city to go for tourism in Canada is Whitehorse. Largely because so few people go to Whitehorse that when you're there...
That's in the Yukon Territory.
People are just like, an out-of-towner, hooray! Because they have these tourism shops that don't really have much going on. And then you walk in and they're like, business! And then they're super nice. And they have weird things in the Yukon. Like, there's a golf course where you have to carry your own patch of grass with you because it's the tundra. You roll out the grass.
And there's also the Kiss the Toe Bar just north of Whitehorse.
Kiss the Toe?
Yeah, and it's a toe in a, and I think it's maybe in like a tequila, it's a spirit of some sort, and it goes into your glass and you're supposed to chuck the, like shoot the spirit and kiss the toe and then it goes back in the bottle. It has been swallowed, I think, like 8 times.
It's not a human toe.
It is a human toe.
Where are they getting these human toes from?
Apparently there was one that somebody found in a bottle, and I'm trying to remember it now, and then it's been swallowed, and then some guy was like, they had to sign up $500 if you swallow the toe. So an American, obviously, just chugged toe and all and slapped $500 on the thing. So then they had to get more toes.
Oh my God.
So they did a tourism, like a PR stunt, essentially.
Donate
a toe. Oh, and they have a toe now. They have a replacement toe. But apparently, they have at least a dozen backup toes that have been donated. Oh. So you can go and drink and kiss the toe. Which is just bizarre. Anyway, what's not bizarre is...
I might disapprove.
Knowing you, you possibly would. One of the things I wanted to talk about, and this segues really nicely, is Joey Sarez, who is an American and is from a small town in Texas and has been on a big tour. He had the 9th charting dance hit in the UK. Not too long ago, and is definitely a twink as far as the gay iconography goes.
Uh-huh.
But he did an interview with Gay Cities where he was talking about, you know, performing at New York Pride is great. However, performing in small local prides is really what he is thrilled to do most.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a lot to be said for performing and going to small community prides and getting a real feel for them. So we're playing a song by Joey Sarez called Dancing to Find Myself.
Let me go into the night where I am known other lit. Gives me my wings, it sends me far away from here. It's like I'm dancing by myself. It's like I'm dancing by myself all day, all night. Dancing by myself. Keep dancing by myself. I feel my love for you fading away. Don't care about anything you try to say. I keep on dancing the whole night away.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is still Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
And I was sneezing in the intermission, so that is definitely a thing. All of those male trees just getting all up in my nose. How inappropriate.
Are we doing a bit? Are we riffing today?
Yeah.
We don't normally riff. Normally it's just me and you're staring at me saying, come on, we have a show to record.
Well, yeah, but I just don't appreciate having pollen up my nose.
Yeah.
It has made me irate towards the trees. And I like trees. And that's a whole thing. Now, one of the things I noticed, actually, and I was looking at some of the prides that are going on, and one of them being actually in Winnipeg Pride, I was looking at their guide. I was trying to look at their website. I couldn't get their website to work. I feel like it wasn't loading. I also have 30 tabs running. Could be me. Who knows?
Yeah, it's probably your fault.
It's probably my fault.
Yeah.
But they have an app for their guide.
Yep.
Which is, and we'll get into that. But when I was looking at their guide, I noticed that one of the first things that isn't an ad, and to be fair, every Pride guide I've ever seen is full of ads.
Yeah.
Actually, I think in their Pride guide, Queer News has an ad.
Yeah.
But one of the things I noticed, straight away was that there's two pages devoted to how people attending Pride can minimize their environmental impact.
Oh.
And I was like, huh.
That's interesting.
And it's like a whole page to, like, you know, the UN says we have until 2030 to, like, get our act together, and people keep leaving stuff all over the place when they go to the Forks, which is where they have the community fair. And they're like, come on now, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Do better. And then there's this really cool multicolored infographic of, like, just five ways you can help the environment. Or, as I think it should be titled, five ways not to be an environmental dick.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Winnipeg is a very walkable city, especially the downtown area.
It does have that reputation. Actually,
you know, you walking to it, busing to it, these are quite easy things to do. Mm-hmm. Also, FYI, parades, nightmare for the traffic.
Oh, and parades also with the amount of litter they generate.
I don't know.
It's astounding.
I don't know. I'm just going to, any French listeners, this is a content warning, but I saw a great Facebook post this morning because it is the Tamarack race weekend in Ottawa. And somebody said, Tamarack race weekend in Ottawa equals the Tabernacle driver weekend in
Yes.
Because you can't get around. We got an Uber downtown. And I'm like, I don't know how you're getting us home. Good luck.
Yeah. For those of you who don't speak Canadian French, tabarnak is basically how you say, like, God damn it. So it's, yeah.
I also, like, I just described a bit of a church, because, like, that's not what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but my whole point here is driving to a Pride event is silly, because the parade's in the way, you have to go around, it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
And being more environmentally conscious is important. But that, so there's two whole guide pages on that, which for me, that's a lot of real estate.
Yeah.
That I was surprised, and like that shows a priority. And then there's another two pages on accessibility.
Oh.
So one about, you know, how the efforts that Pride Winnipeg is taking to be accessible, and I'm like, oh, cool, like,
yeah,
ESL interpretation on the stage, yada, yada, yada. Mm. Actually, I ran into somebody working on accessibility, and this is what I'm saying now is not a paid promo. I actually ran into this woman. I didn't run it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it didn't hurt.
I encountered this lady
at
the Fierté Canada Pride Conference in Ottawa, and they were talking about how to try and make Pride more accessible. And they were talking about essentially described video for the blind.
Yes.
They were trying to think of ways to do described pride parade for the blind. Because you can't see you can see the hoot and hollering.
Yeah.
But you can't see, the costumes and the floats. And you hear people cheering, but you don't know who they are. And so they were talking about how to... I think community radio is missing a trick if they don't do sports announcers. Yeah. And coming around the corner, we have P-Flag! Well,
no, not even. Because, growing up around Christmas and New Year's every year, my mom would watch the Rose Bowl and the Orange Bowl, mm-hmm. which are these massive parades in the States that are sort of centered around the football.
Yeah.
And they have announcers there that do basically play-by-play descriptions of everything that goes on because they're also on the radio. Mm-hmm. So they're doing... The live recording things are both video and audio and also radio only. So they mm-hmm. do describe everything. There is this, tradition of decades of describing parades as they happen. I find that really interesting that nobody knows
about it. Does it for pride parades?
No, nothing for pride parades. But, yeah. I mean, it's, you got to start somewhere. And as for accessibility in general, there is that challenge that historically... gay bars were not accessible. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the kinds of spaces that gay business owners could afford were not ideal. So the first gay bar I ever went to was when I was living in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And you had to go up a hill and then down a side street, down an alley, down a secondary alley off of that alley, and up a fire escape.
I don't know how you were how many alleys? That doesn't make sense.
It's Hong Kong, though. It's mostly alleys.
It makes sense. An upper fire escape. You actually in Ottawa the Swizzles, which you have to walk past
a
Thai restaurant.
Yeah.
And then as if you've just remembered your keys and you turn around and down a tiny little stairwell. It looks like where they roll the kegs to go in the
It looks like cellar access.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a bar, that's a gay bar.
Yeah.
But that's so common for gay spaces.
The lookout, the way to get in there, it looks like you're using the kitchen entrance to the sushi restaurant downstairs.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of that. And some of that is just the poverty of the gay community. And mm-hmm. the back to the pink dollar thing, the income distribution of the community is like an inverted bell shape where you have a lot of people at the low end, a lot of people at the high end, and not so many in the middle. But, if you want to have a successful community space, you need to cater to everyone. So you're kind of catering to the low end. Which means you're taking up non-ideal spaces that often have zero accessibility. So, there is that sort of historical thing going on there. And Pride has suffered for accessibility as a result of that.
Well,
people are trying to turn that around now, for sure, and that's good.
Well, there was a second page on accessibility, which is five things to do when you meet a person with a disability.
Yeah.
Hiding behind a tree is not very nice. And there's some other great ones. But it just made me think, actually, of Moncton in New Brunswick.
As one does, yes.
Well, I often cast my mind over to Moncton. I've got a very Welsh thing. Oh, I was dreaming of Moncton the other day. And,
Moncton?
Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely place, a little drive-through, and it was just wonderful. Where was I going with this? Yeah, no, Moncton, there was a great piece in the CBC about... last September, their only gay bar closed. Very sad. But this is something that's sort of happening coast to coast. Gay bars are closing. It's a major issue.
Yeah.
We've been talking about it on and off in the show. But what the story was about now, mm-hmm. which was out just this past week or so, was around how the youth are creating new spaces. And the adults, the older generations, are also sort of following them into these spaces. So coffee houses,
board game cafes,
absolutely. Things that are more accessible, less centered around alcohol consumption.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what we're seeing. We're seeing the gay bar scene still thrive. Cruise and Tango's in Toronto, for example, still. Very, very important. But in many communities, there's certainly a diversification of where gay is happening and how gay is happening.
Yeah, and to be honest, I used to work in a gay bar, so it is kind of sad to see the death of community spaces like that. But on the other hand, I think diversification is probably the better way to go. So when I was living in Hamilton, Ontario, which is where I was working at the time, we would always have somewhere between 3 and 9 gay bars. And that Six is just people opening businesses and getting shut down and opening and getting shut down and opening and getting shut down. Really what that means is that that community can support three bars and another six spaces that probably should not be bars. They should be something else.
Yeah.
Because there's enough desire for more spaces, but not enough desire for more bars. Mm-hmm. And that is definitely something that a lot of communities are starting to pick up on, the idea of, you know, it is good to have one bar where you can go and have a drink and there's a dance floor. But having other spaces as well, because not everyone's into that. There's also the idea there. This is something we've also been hearing on and off basically since we started this show, that DJing is dead, and that a lot of dance clubs don't know how to do music anymore. And you go and they're just playing songs that are popular, and you're standing there saying, How do you dance to this?
Yeah.
The classic example is when bars play Barbie Girl, which everyone gets excited for, but you can't dance to it because it keeps having all those breaks. Whereas good bars, if you're going to play something from Aqua, you play Dr. Jones. I mean, this is an old example, obviously. But
yeah.
When you play Dr. Jones, people lose their tiny little minds.
It's so true.
And and then they dance the whole time. But that's...
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so there's a whole bunch of things. Like, the dance club in general in North America is dying as a phenomenon. So there's a lot of things going on here.
Where gay clubs are dying, I think we're seeing prides really emerge.
Yeah.
And I think that's...
The problem is that that's once a year.
Yeah.
And that's not a community space. That's a community festival. They can help each other.
Yeah, you get a sense of community. And we were just talking about Winnipeg, and we missed, because we were talking about Eurovision, but we missed mentioning Gimli, not the Welsh dwarf from Lord of the Rings fame,
right?
But the town just off of Lake Winnipeg, that's north of Winnipeg, obviously, hence the name. But they held their first Pride celebration at the end of May, nearish the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it really shows that we're seeing more towns, villages, smaller communities coming together and sort of celebrating. And, you know, whether or not you're gay is almost irrelevant. A pride festival in a community in a space like Gimli is all about getting to know your neighbors, getting to know, you know, taking an opportunity to just build community amongst each other, regardless of X, Y, Z.
About family. Smaller towns like that, they tend to have more of a family picnic feel to them.
Absolutely.
Which is not to disparage them at all, because both of us have said multiple times each.
It's our favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, small town prides are so much more intimate and a lot more... It's a more subtle kind of fun. It's it's not woo kind of fun.
Less naked floats, more...
Adirondack chairs and a cold beer.
Absolutely, that's my kind of fun.
One cold beer, because you want a beer, but you're driving home. Let's not be crazy. So, yeah.
you know, some prides still have elements of that. Winnipeg Pride ends in the Forks, which is the park there, and their parade is on June the 2nd.
Okay.
So be sure to check them out, and we will be keeping an eye on it. We're jumping into our next song. It is a French one. It is... Pierre Lapointe with an alphabet, and we'll be back just on the
A. Toujours faire rimer amour avec toujours. B. Les initiales bébé. C. Pour toi, aux blanches cocaïnes. D. Souvenir du dada Zurich. L'ectoplasme qui sort de ta bouche. F. La femme qui se réveille en toi. G. La reine gastronomique des sens. H. Les homos hurlent à la lune. I. L'intelligence de ne pas choisir. J. Le jour qui repousse la nuit. K. Les infinis multiples du kaléidoscope. L. Les larmes qui mènent vers le déni. M. Morrison dans sa baignoire aux 17 rue Beautry. N. toujours chérir la naïveté. O. La renaissance d'Autodix. P. Les fashion pirates de Vivienne Westwood. Q. Toujours des questions sans réponse. R. Le rythme rapide de Steve Reich. S. Salvador et Amanda. T. La tristesse, moteur de tes joies. U. L'uranium 235 de Tchernobyl. V. Les voitures froissées de David Cronenberg. W. Walter Van Berendonck est grand. X. La génération prémâchée. Y. Deux amoureux sous le ciel de Yellowknife. Z. L'humain habite dans un zoo. Chacune des lettres de l'alphabet nous empêche de rester muet. Comme une mélodie divine, elles évoquent en nous la doctrine de nos fragiles existences, trop souvent vidées de leur sens.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's Queer Media. Now, I want to talk about something that came up ways ago on the 14th of May. And one of the things that I want to talk about it is because it is a beautiful mural that was painted up by Moose Jaw Pride.
Okay.
And it's sort of you can, and our listeners can't see it. Obviously, yeah. This is radio. But for me, it shows a permanency. You know, rainbow sidewalks, it is, you're walking and you're like, oh, wow, this yeah. city takes gay rights seriously. Yeah. You know, for us, actually, Halifax is in the news because their sidewalk paint is, like, super eroded and, like, clearly snow, rain, and age. Like, you can maybe make out a rainbow.
Yeah, that's...
And they're gonna repaint them. It's yeah. okay. It's yeah. gonna be okay. They're repainting it. I think they're even adding a new one. It's gonna be cool. But murals are public art.
Yes.
And I really like public art because as long as there's a placard, don't even get me started on hashtag no placard.
Okay.
But that's a whole other thing.
And by placard, you just mean like some kind of a...
description.
A brass plate or something that describes yeah. who did it, for why, what's the thing called. In some cases, what's the medium? Like, I've been to a few art galleries, I'm just staring at something like, what is that made of? That's weird. And there's yeah. no information, yeah. like, you know, multi-medium wire and something. You know, there's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually complained to the city, well, the councillor, because...
About the plinths?
There was these really cool-looking plinths, like giant concrete things with, like, glass art in them. And there was four of them stretched out across eight blocks.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this?
Do you know what I still...
Why is this here?
Do you know what they look like to me?
I don't know.
Like an artist's interpretation of the four stones from The Fifth Element. That movie, yeah.
Well... The
and like
first
one is
one.
Blue and one is like fire color and like one is all multicolored and looks like air and the last one's like earth tone. So yeah, no, it looks like
the elements.
It
yeah.
looks like the four. Well, elements.
Apparently, only one of them, way at the end, had a bleeding description. So I was like, anyway, if you ever make public art, put a notice, even if it's a printout in like one of those. Oh my God, it's been so long since I've used
it. Or have a website where you can look yeah, it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because you can sign it and write the website into the art.
That's
Who
true.
Knew?
Right.
Anyway, so the artist Carly Jessup with this, Moose Jaw Pride.
Okay.
They got a grant from the Saskatchewan Arts Board and Deluxe Paints. Moose Jaw actually gave them really good deals on paint. And they've just developed a historical... mural. I mean, I like it. I think it's obviously it's very gay, lots of rainbows and colors, but it's a statement piece, and it's something that, you know, there was that time, I forget which town it was in New Brunswick or Newfoundland, where there was that uproar because an elderly man was seen spitting on the crosswalk. He may have just had phlegm in his mouth that day, who knows?
Yeah.
But for me, I think a mural on the wall tells a story. It creates a narrative. And for me, I kind of like crosswalks, love them, big statement pieces. Murals, I think, convey a lot more information.
Well, and depending on where you are in the world, murals actually have a huge history. So, I mean, I know that in Mexico, murals are taken more seriously than canvas paintings. Mm. There's a huge history of political murals in Mexico. I only know this because I went to undergrad at McMaster University, and they had a mural painted by a Mexican, and it was a commentary on the balance between, you know, this and that, and then they put drywall in front of it because they were renovating the place, and it just turned into a thing. And then I learned all about political muralism. But there's political muralism in Canada is not as big as it used to be, but it's such an easy thing to put in because really you're just looking for time-honored standard messages that will be just as good in 20 years as now. And I think acceptance and history are the kinds of things that are future-proof.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah. And actually things that sort of tell a narrative of what's happened before as well. I think that goes a long way. One of the things that I wanted to mention that a lot of people have heard about is the IKEA bags.
I mean, I hadn't until
you
today.
You hadn't heard about it?
Well, no, I mean, I was reading up on recent events before we started, I did see it. And it, to me, it's a plastic bag with a rainbow on it. So, I mean,
yeah, it's you know, in itself, it is a bit of a non-story. And I get that. And for me, I think it's important to say IKEA releases rainbow bag. I mean, first of all, as I feel like many people who have ever been to IKEA has in their house somewhere a giant blue bag that can be quite useful.
Well, I mean, the problem is they're more shallow than you want them to be and more wide than you need them to be. They're always
oddly unwieldy.
Yeah.
And as a gay man, I'm like, if I can have that but very gay, I would get one of those.
Narrower and deeper, like the kind of thing you put groceries in. That's what I would want.
According to the picture, it does look a little bit narrower and deeper. But I don't want to talk about the bag.
Okay.
I think the bag is great. I think the bag is important. I think
it is what it is. It's a non-story.
It is. You're right. Yeah. It's a non. For us, it's a non-story. We've talked about companies, making gay products to kind of raise their profile. Listerine became the butt of many jokes, and literally butt jokes when they released a gay Listerine. Well, like a rainbow pride colored Listerine. Yeah.
It's in 2019, it's no big deal. If they were doing that in 1995, that would have been a huge deal.
Well, it's not. I mean, IKEA makes a bajillion of these bags, and it's a nice gesture. But what I think carries more weight than this...
than an IKEA bag? See, we're riffing. This is what happens when you...
Coincidentally, we're going back to Winnipeg for this one. This week's episode is brought to you by Winnipeg, I think. But anyway, the IKEA in Winnipeg reached out to us with a news story. I think they thought we had people in Winnipeg. We actually reached out to one of the local radio stations there to see if they wanted to cover this, but nobody was available at that time.
Okay.
Volunteers is what it is.
Yeah.
But why I want to talk about this is the gay bags... Awesome, cool, very nice, trendy. But what they did was they supported the Rainbow Resource Center with the LGBT community and youth in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And they cut them a check for $5,000. Oh. So for IKEA in Winnipeg, it was all about, putting your money where your mouth is, not just slapping pretty colors on a bag. And I think that's quite important.
Yeah,
I think that's the right way of going about it.
If you're going to do pride branding and not engage the community in some way, then that's not a good sign. Although, for IKEA to only donate $5,000 is kind of...
Well, I think it's if it's done on a store by store basis.
Yeah, like the local
store. You know what I mean? And like a lot of stores donate to multiple causes over the year.
Yeah.
So I get that.
The closest grocery store to us donates food to the annual Pride family picnic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the only thing they do for Pride, but they do donate a lot of food so that you can go to this event and everybody eats for free.
Yeah.
Which is, that is very inclusive, because one of the biggest problems for a lot of Pride events
food insecurities.
Food, but also just finances in general.
Yeah.
So you have this open park and you have people barbecuing, and so long as you're willing to wait 5 minutes in line, you get a free hamburger.
Exactly.
And they have veggie burgers.
And if
and
it's
like
a family event, if you have to feed, my mother fosters and like my sister has children.
Yeah.
And you know, often if they're out, the only option that is financially reasonable
is to bring a lunch with them.
But also McDonald's. I mean, also the play things you can run around.
Yeah.
But for them, it is a consideration. You know, there's me, and this is where the gay dollar comes in. It's me, my boyfriend, that's it.
Yeah.
But for, you know, my mother, for example, there's her, her husband, and, you know, this kid and that kid.
Yeah,
you know,
because your mother fosters children.
Yeah, and there's some young ones as well, and it all adds up.
And it's
donating sausages and buns actually goes a long way.
And it's an issue of not just donating, but donating in the right way. Because, like, I think that grocery store gets set back probably, like, $600 or $700 in total over the entire Pride season. But they're donating it in a way that's smart and actually benefits a lot of people in a more impactful way than just writing a check and giving it to someone who's going
to
sink it into the bureaucratic element of their non-for-profit organization.
Not to say that these folks in Winnipeg are going to sink it into bureaucracy. It's a youth-serving organization. But I think, you know, if writing a check makes sense, then do that.
Yeah.
You know, for me. And I think that goes a long way. I don't know. Listerine, great. But I always like to see these stories where, companies have taken it that little step further.
Or when they think about what they're doing and they try to find a way to do something impactful.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Well, we've reached the end of the show. There was a heck of a lot that we didn't get to.
Mm-hmm.
So much gay stuff happening. I'm going to very quickly mention that. No, I'm not. It's too long a story. We won't get into it. But I'll post it on the website.
Well, now you're just teasing us.
I know.
What's the headline?
I'm going to pick a shorter one. So Kamloops in BC raised the Pride flag on May the... Oh, it's Idahot, International Day Against Homophobia and Trans... I'm going to get my gay card revoked because I can't remember when it is. anyway, recently, I think it was May 16th or May 17th, and what's interesting, the Kamloops, quite a small rural community, they, along with about 50 other small towns across Canada, all raised the Pride flag. It was a coordinated effort for the 50th anniversary.
At the same time?
Partial decriminalization, of homosexual.
Did they account for time zones?
I mean, I feel like you would have accounted for time zones, but that's just you.
We're a big country.
But I think it's important. For me, that was a big deal. It was a way of being like, you know, 50 years, partial decriminalization.
Yes.
International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. Let's raise a flag, raise a bit of awareness about it in our own communities.
Right.
And then bring the flag back down again until June when we all have a gay old time.
Right.
Anyway, so that was a pretty big story across the country that happened.
Okay.
That we didn't get to because we took a week off and did Eurovision. So... is what it is.
We're
playing out with our final song of the day, which is from Eurovision. I'm not kidding, it's not from Eurovision. This is Feist, My Moon, My Man, and we'll be back next week. My name's been Luke Smith.
And I have been Sebastian, and thank you for listening.
My moon, my man, so changeable and such a lovable and again. My moon's my face, my day in the face is the calendar page again. Take it slow, take it easy on me. It's just a lie, just a lie. I'm gonna please take it slow, take it easy.
clean, oh no. Take it slow.